British Public Radio. Comedy.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Has the Pope left his job to replace Jay in 5?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Why have my shares in Findus taken a dive?
Answer me this, answer me this. Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Well, I guess it's just another one of those weeks where the only thing everyone can talk about is David Sned.
52 weeks a year.
Well, John in Birmingham has written in to say, you seem very clued up about David Sneddon.
Well, not really, but I was very clued up on the first series of Fame Academy, which I used to watch obsessively.
We've always liked to dip a toe into the pop cultural waters, I think.
Yes.
Speak for yourselves.
Martin doesn't, because Martin cannot swim.
So John in Birmingham says, Helen, answer me this. What happened to Alex Parks, the winner of the second series? After a couple of really good singles and an excellent second album, she just seemed to vanish.
It seems after her amazing second album, she retired from the music industry. She didn't really like it, or they weren't making enough money out of her. And one of you listeners wrote to us relatively recently, I can't remember why, to tell us that Alex Parks was working in a cafe in Cornwall.
What about that one who was a bit like Pete Doherty? Do you remember that?
Yeah, Peter Brame. He went out with Fern Cotton and then disappeared. So he's probably still in her house somewhere looking for the exit.
I didn't watch Fame Academy, but as much as I sort of followed what was happening in the magazines and stuff, my understanding of that situation was, here's a man who dresses like Pete Doherty, therefore he's the same as Pete Doherty because he's got the same haircut.
And a hat.
Did Lamar do Fame Academy?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He was quite successful.
Probably the most credible out of Fame Academy, I'd say.
For a while, but Where is he now? He's probably in the cafe with Alex Parks filling up the ketchup bottles.
Yes, but he's the manager. Alex Parks is merely a temp.
He's probably original manager by now.
Isn't it weird that we don't remember at all, really, David Sneddon and Alex Parks? We have to Google them to help our memories. And yet, the likes of Jedward and the Cheeky Girls are household names still.
It's better to be the joke candidate, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, if Alex Parks sat on my face, I wouldn't recognise her.
She wouldn't, though, because she's not into men.
You're right, and that is the only reason. Otherwise, obviously, she'd feel compelled to do so.
All lesbians are invisible to Ollie, man.
Hi, this is Oliver from Salisbury. Helen, Ollie, answer me this. How were the animals of the Chinese zodiac chosen?
An appropriate question for this time of year, of course, because it is Chinese New Year, as it is for weeks.
Happy New Year.
What's that about? Why does that go on for weeks, where everyone else's New Year is a day?
Because there are a lot of delicious dim sum to eat at that time.
You can have a lovely moon cake with a preserved egg in it.
It seems to be quite difficult to find out why the particular animals have been chosen. Some say it's because astrology, and that's what the constellations look like. And then others say, no, it wasn't astrology at all. It was Buddha who made all the animals assemble to clear up the world, and only 12 of them showed up. Which is the 12 in the zodiac.
Okay.
Which is a lot more plausible even than astrology.
It seems to me that a lot of this kind of Chinese calendar stuff was done so that you can take the attributes of people that you know and say they were born in this year, therefore they're a bit like a snake.
Yes, because as a rooster, Ollie, born in 1981, you are extremely sociable. Correct, right?
Yeah.
And prefer being the centre of attention, warmer.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Always bragging about themselves and their accomplishments. They continually seek the unwavering attention of others.
At the Ollie Man.
Which can be annoying.
Right.
But it's less accurate for mine, I think. It says that good career fields for monkeys, born in 1980, you see, are accounting and banking, air traffic controller, dealer, but it doesn't say of what, scientist, engineer, stock market trader.
Well, actually, I'm laughing, Helen. It could be that you are in just completely the wrong line of work.
Well, great news, though, for the Chinese New Year, but also just for February. We have a special promotion going with Audible.
That's right. What better way to celebrate the Chinese New Year than with your choice of a free audiobook from over 80,000 available?
Freebies. Freebies. We strongly recommend because it's like reading, but easier.
That's right. And we know you like listening to people talking.
Because you're doing it right now.
Now you can do that and sound learned.
Yeah, if you think, oh, I like free things, I like audiobooks, just hop along to answermethispodcast.com/audible. And if you do that, you are supporting Answer Me This, so we'll be very grateful, and you'll be very grateful to yourself for having the acumen to download a free audiobook.
Do you have a particular title that you're keen to get on with?
I am quite keen to listen to Frank Langella's memoirs.
Is the title To Be Frank?
Oh, I don't know.
It should be, because it sounds, if it's going to be a sexual confession, that would be a good title, but I bet every Frank thinks, should the title of my autobiography be To Be Frank?
Sinatra, Sidebottom.
Yeah, Skinner. And then once you've done it, you can't then nick another Frank. I don't think Anne Frank's got an audiobook, Helen, well, for obvious reasons.
She's not narrated it herself,
she
if
hasn't.
There is one.
No, but I agree. I think once you've done it, then you can't rip it off. There's also 50 Shades of Grey is now an audiobook, ladies.
That was, I listened to a bit of that because you can listen to extracts before you choose your book, and it sounded like the narrator was slightly mocking the material and not being the finest literature.
Well, but yeah, but how do you read that kind of steamy claptrap without sounding a bit like you're having fun?
The bit I heard wasn't even steamy, it was someone driving a car. Oh, it was such a great car. She loved the powerfulness of the car as she drove it along the road, the big road.
You too could be listening to that for free, listeners, if you take this promotion.
Here's a question from Elliot, who says, I have been in a queue before.
Wow, good story.
Slow hand clap.
In fact, I was in one today.
Oh my God, it's an even better story than I thought. I was being sarcastic.
Answer me this, Ollie. What is the longest queue ever?
This is a very tricky question, actually. Harder than it appears, because how do you judge the longest queue? Is it the amount of people or the amount of time?
If I'd known this question was going to be tricky, then I would have nixed it on grounds of being very unrewarding, even if you can answer it.
If it's how many people...
I think it should be how many people.
Okay.
Yeah. Because you could queue by yourself outside the Apple store for 200 days before the new iPhone comes out.
I was going to use that as an example, yeah, because exactly...
But that's just where you live. You live on the street outside the Apple store.
But anyway, in terms of amount of people rather than time, Wateraid did a publicity stunt where they tried to do the world's longest queue for a toilet.
Oh, no.
The problem is, these people weren't even really queuing to use the toilet. Well, if they were, it would have been disgusting.
Well, they would have needed to use the toilet eventually.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't fake a queue.
Well, this is the, but they did. All around the world, various like Rotary clubs and stuff did it. There was one group in India, in particularly in Bhopal, 1,500 people queued for a toilet to raise awareness. But actually...
That's stupid.
Well, and also, queues to get into, like, say, the Olympic Stadium, that would be 100,000 people, wouldn't it? So then you think, well, that's not the longest queue, is it? How do you...
What about the long march?
It's not a queue because they're marching.
Yeah, but they're getting somewhere and they've got to wait to get there.
No, but queuing, you have to stand.
What about the exile from Egypt?
That's, again, it's not a queue. You need
the world's longest queue.
Trying to get to the promised land.
You need them to be queuing, Martin, not walking.
And Moses issued everyone a fast pass.
If you got a question, email your question to answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com.
Here's a question from Ed from Oxford, who says, Ollie, answer me this. Why are those cellophane fortune-telling thingies that you get in crackers always in the shape of a fish?
Now, for those of you who think we might be talking about Jacob's crackers there, we're not. We're talking about bits of cellophane shaped like a fish that come in Christmas crackers.
Yeah, you put them in your hand and they curl up according to your mood, but really presumably according to the heat of your hand.
Yeah, well, according to molecules, basically.
What?
They're made of sodium polyacrylate. And that means that they just grab onto water molecules. So it depends how watery and how
sweaty.
Humid the area is around it. Yeah, so if you're sweaty, if your hands are clammy, if you've just been touching water, it's going to curl up differently, which is why it appears to react differently to different people.
Whereas
actually, it's the different atmospheres of their hands.
Oh, that is interesting.
You could use that as a tester for if you're going to get a damp, clammy handshake. You'd be like, hold it there. Yeah. Just got to test you. Yeah, I'm not going near that.
But as for why they're shaped like fish, it's very hard to find out that. I imagine it's just that it needs to be roughly that size for it to curl up.
And that shape, it can't be too wide.
So exactly. So it's going to be just a square otherwise, and it's just more fun to cut it into a novelty shape. And I suppose a fish is very easy, isn't it? Yeah. Two triangles at the end, round thing at the end, easy.
Some little decorative scales.
You can make a snowman, that would be more Christmassy.
Yeah,
it's too round.
That's true. But then the snowman would be odd in red. Wouldn't it?
Rocket? Or a rasher of bacon? That wouldn't be too odd in red.
In this time of purse strings tightening, the internet's a smorgasbord of fabulous free things. Like showbiz news, no need for magazine stalking your old school friends. Videos of fat kids falling over, stealing films and music. Sharing photos of your nan, filing your tax return. But by far my favourite free thing to type is answer me this into Skype.
Here's a question from Amy from York, who says, Ollie, answer me this. In stop motion animation, what do they use to animate water?
Good question.
Is it shiny things like shiny cellophane or shiny fabric or shiny?
Yes. shiny
things that are plastic. Water.
I think sometimes they do actually just use water. But obviously the problem is that's quite hard to control if you want it to move.
They always say never work with children, animals or water.
So it's fine if, for example, there's a cup of tea in the background of the shot and it's not going to move at all, then you could probably use real liquid. Mm. But of course, as soon as it needs to move, so for example, if it's the ocean, if it's the sea,
then
you need to use something iridescent so that it looks shiny and like water. Because if you're doing frame by frame, then you're not getting a continuous shot of the water. So if you have to move the character bit by bit, then and the water needs to move at the same time, obviously you need to be in control of that. Whereas water...
Bloody nightmare.
Apparently sometimes they use hair gel.
Okay. That must stink.
James and the Giant Peach. Mm-hmm. There was a water fountain in the background in a square.
That's tricky.
Yeah, very tricky, right? So apparently what they had is that this... Imagine how painful... I know everything about stop motion animation is incredibly painful and laborious anyway.
It's like you hate yourselves, stop motion animators.
Especially when computer animation exists now as well. I mean, it really is. It's almost a sort of extravagant way of self-flagellation. But anyway, they had... water fountains, and what they did is they had a series of sculptures of water fountains showing the water in different stages. Each time they moved a frame, they swapped the water fountain for the next one so that it gave the impression of movement throughout the sequence.
It's a great job for people with OCD, isn't it?
It really is.
My name's Gavin from Hull. Helen Lawley, Anthony is. My sister's just got a baby, and everything that gets bought for the baby seems to have giraffes on it. I'm wondering what the connection is with giraffes and babies.
Well, what's the connection between babies and Elmer the Elephant, or babies and little skyrockets printed all over their pyjamas?
Or babies and the ABC, something that they don't really have to learn for about another 2.5 years.
Exactly.
Got to put something on it, haven't you? And it would be inappropriate to put adult themes on their clothes.
And also, it's a non-gender-specific animal, because all little girl stuff, which is why I don't believe your giraffe theory, Gavin, all stuff for little girls is covered in butterflies.
Okay, that's interesting.
So maybe it's a metaphor for the new life that the baby represents, but that only really works if maternity clothes were covered in caterpillars.
Yes. Mm. I don't want to get into the whole area of, like, blue gender for boys and pink for girls. Yeah. I am interested in the idea of gender-specific animals, though. I mean, take an elephant.
Oh, I think of that as female, but I think it's because it nurtures its young for so long.
Okay, rook?
Male.
Monkey?
Male.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think of monkey as male as well, but then it has quite a male tendency, doesn't it, in terms of how...
spunk everywhere?
No, the whole kind of, I don't know, the slight infantilisation of chimpanzees, the way people go like, oh, you cheeky monkey, is very much like you're a little boy, isn't it? Even if they're female monkeys.
Oh, go on.
Koala.
Lazy male. Or sexless female.
I think that's gender non-specific, actually, Koala.
I think those categories that you just outlined would be harsh things to prescribe to a baby. But interesting.
Jackson Leeds. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Since I've been getting a free period off school every end of Thursday, I've found myself going to the cinema, making it a tradition. And since it's Thursday daytime, there's usually nobody there except me, maybe a couple of people there. Answer me this. How acceptable is it to move into one of the premium seats? The way I see it, I've paid for quite a bit of a ticket anyway, so if no one's going to be sitting there, is it not just a waste to sit there myself?
Well, it's kind of fine, isn't it? But the fact that you're calling us about it suggests you have a guilty conscience for doing it. You know that it's not quite right and it's not what you've paid for. You know that there's some niggling doubt there.
I don't understand the whole premium pricing of seats.
The premium
in the cinema
thing,
anyway.
It's a crock, isn't it?
Rubbish.
It is rubbish.
A bigger cup holder. Give over.
Well, no, there's leather padding as well.
I don't want that.
It's very important
if
you're seeing a fetish film.
I want something that is not a leather seat. If anything, I'd have to take a blanket to cover it.
The problem with the premium seats is not so much that they're more comfortable, which is why you'd want to sit there, because I agree with you. Actually, in a modern multiplex cinema, they're all roughly the same level of comfort anyway. The issue is they block out the two rows that roughly are the ones you'd want to sit in, aren't they? About halfway back. So you're paying for the location, really.
Oh, I see.
So it's, you know, from that point of view, yes, I agree. I'd move there if I could. Have you ever, when you were a kid especially, perhaps underage, snuck into a screening of a film for which you did not have a ticket?
Well, as an adult, my friend Julie and I were going to go and see a Mike Lee film, and she watched the credits and she said, "This is going to be depressing." And I said, "Yes, well, it is a Mike Lee film." I was surprised that you suggested it. It doesn't seem to be really your bag. And so we went into another screen instead, and I think we watched Red Dragon, which was rubbish.
Well, I went to see Boogie Nights when I was too young to go and see Boogie Nights.
Jesus, you deviant.
By buying a ticket for a 15 and then sneaking into an 18, and it was full.
Oh, so what did you do?
Well, it was unreserved seating, so me and my friend got there during the trailers, then sat down, and then when people came in with tickets, they were really furious because they couldn't get a seat.
And you didn't care.
Then they brought in someone with like a torch, like turned the lights on, was like, there are people in here who shouldn't have tickets. I'm not going to own up then because you're going to get chucked out of the cinema.
And you're quite a good actor, so you probably wore your most innocent face.
So what happened?
The other people got their money back, turned away, said, sorry, there aren't any more seats, it's sold out.
You're a monster.
Well, I hope it was worth it, Ollie.
It was quite a good film, actually. If you're going to sneak in to see an 18 when you're too young, I think Boogie Nights is quite a good one.
Yeah, because you're getting William H. Macy and John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
For your illicit viewing.
All of the initials.
If you're in a nearly empty cinema on a Thursday afternoon, I think it's very unlikely that the staff really give a shit where you're sitting.
Yeah. What a joy as well. What was your free period joy when you were in the... I imagine he's probably in the sixth form.
We weren't allowed to do anything. We had to go to the library.
My free period treat when I was in the sixth form.
Did you have free periods? Because you went to hippie schools. So the whole thing was voluntary, man.
Everything's a free period. Yeah, we did. We'd have, like, I think it was Wednesday afternoons. We'd finish at like 12.
Learn or don't learn, I don't care. Make your own decisions, guys. Autonomous.
I went to the gym. That was, honestly, I know, time well invested, eh?
That was the most illicit activity you could think of.
I got really into it when I was in the sixth form. Wednesday afternoons, me and Ben used to go to the gym together.
Muscle man.
Yeah.
That's so weird. All my friends went to the pub and played pool and smoked fags. And in my free periods, I probably did physics homework.
Hi, Helen, Ollie and Martin. This is Toby from Eastbourne. I've just had a packet of fruit pastels where all I got was red sweets with the exception of one green one. When I said this to my friend, they said I had better chances of winning the lottery. Is that true?
The lottery is going to be harder to win because although you've only got half a dozen balls to match, whereas in the fruit pastels you've got 14,
yeah.
Instead of there being just five or six flavours, there are... Well, it goes up to double figures, doesn't it, of lottery balls? However
49,
many
I think.
Yeah, 49. So you know, don't you, that clearly the odds on the lottery are still pretty high. But in pastel terms, it's still remarkable, I think, to get 13 pastels all the same colour.
Oh, but would you want them all to be green? No!
Never.
I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I might have got some of the factors out, but I think it's about 1 in 6 billion.
Oh, so it's much rarer than a lottery win.
Yeah, if I've got that right, yeah.
No, there's no way you've got that right. For the reason I said, that can't be true.
It's unlikely, but it's not as unlikely as winning tens of millions of pounds. And it's not as good, is it?
No, it's definitely
How long can you dine out on this? How many of your friends are desperately trying to get you to have one of your green fruit pastels?
Like reading, but not while I'm driving. Apparently that's illegal.
I want to listen to Richard Dawkins reading Darwin's Voyage of the Beagle.
Me too. Well, now we can do that, and I'll keep my license by signing up for a free audiobook.
Let's go to answermethispodcast.com/audible and have a look.
Here's a question from Ian in St Albans, who says, today I noticed on the news that a woman had been to see Les Miserables at the theatre 957 times.
Wow. One day more.
And then some. She might have been a few more times since he sent this email.
Mm.
How long is Les Mis?
In the theatre, it's about 4 hours of your life, because you've got the interval in the middle. Yeah.
Well, it's not only a time cost, because Ian says, so far, this has cost her an estimated £50,000.
Oh, wow.
It's a bit over 50 quid a time. Ian says, I remarked to my wife that I thought it was rather odd for someone to do this.
Mm.
But my wife's view was that as long as the person is getting enjoyment, there is nothing wrong with it.
That's right, yes. If you enjoy watching a convict manning the barricades of a revolution as his comrades die around him, there's nothing weird about that. See it as many times as you like.
Any compulsive behaviour, as long as they're enjoying it, there's nothing wrong with it.
Take your joy in whatever pain you seek.
Well, Ian disagrees with his wife. He says, surely it cannot be good for someone to be so hooked on something to that extent. My wife was quick to point out that I watch some of my favourite TV and movies over and over, e.g. Frasier and White Christmas. However, 957 times, come on. Yeah, exactly. You could not get through the Frasier episodes where Daphne's mum is in it more than once. Anyway, Ian says, Ollie, answer me this. Is it weird to see a show time and time and time and time again?
Well, the example that you raise, Ian, of watching the same thing at Christmas, which I imagine is why you watch White Christmas a lot.
Well, he hasn't said that he watches it at Christmas.
No, he hasn't, but I imagine,
assuming.
I interpret...
You're normalising it.
Yeah, if you watch White Christmas every day, then you're a hypocrite, yes. But because I do that Christmas thing myself, I watch Mary Poppins every Christmas.
That's not even a Christmas film, it's just a Christmas-compatible film.
It's a really Christmassy feeling, for, like musicals somehow are right at Christmas.
Little Shop of Horrors, that's not Christmassy. Even though Christmas is plants.
Well, I think all musicals are slightly Christmassy, but Mary Poppins in particular. But the point is, I watch it every Boxing Day. I feel like Boxing Day isn't Boxing Day unless I've seen it.
And yeah, you've never bloody seen The Sound of Music.
Yeah, no, I've never seen that.
Why? What's wrong with you?
Because Mary Poppins fills that function for me, ticks that box for me. Every Christmas, I think, I want that candy stripe jacket that Bert's wearing in the Jolly Holiday sequence, and then I forget all about it.
But then you might watch Sound of Music and think, I want those romper suits made out of curtains that all those kids are wearing. You haven't given yourself the chance.
There's a whole different scale. Like I dread to think how many times I've seen the film Aliens. I can quote that film almost verbatim. Uh-huh. But this woman has watched Les Mis the equivalent of 6 months without sleeping continuously in her life. Think about that. That is terrifying. That's like Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah. No, I think what you were hinting at there regarding my lack of interest in The Sound of Music is part of the conversation here, isn't it? Not to take anything away from her love of Les Mis. I think it's a good piece of work. It's a good show. But when you're seeing it that many times, it's
a compulsion. It's no longer discovery or enjoyment. It's the unwillingness to let go of the familiar in favour of a fresh experience, maybe.
It betrays a lack of curiosity about other art.
It's like the hoarding of culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's other things she would have missed because she'd perhaps never know about the work of David Sneddon because she was watching Les Miserables.
How do you think she feels about the film?
Well, I think the problem with this is, even though Les Mis is a massive show, I think one of the most successful musicals of all time, nonetheless, she probably feels it's her thing. Like, she probably thinks, well, I don't know if she's seen it more than anyone else in the world. She probably has. She probably thinks, this is my little secret. And it's that thing of the whole world then being able to do a thing that you love. Mm. You know, like when you really love a band and you listen to their CD every day and then suddenly they get a number one, you know.
Well, also, she's been to the theatre.
Yeah.
I'm speculating that Ian saw her on local news, not national. So if this woman lives in St Albans, she's got to come into London.
Yeah.
She's got to get to Cambridge Circus, as was, wherever it is.
Now, that can be £13, even off peak.
Yeah, well, I suppose, though, she's thinking, they suffered on the barricades, I can do this again.
Or at least a sandwich on the way.
I mean, there is something reassuring about seeing the same thing again and again. This is why children like things to be repeated, isn't it? And you know, this is why, actually, a lot of those kinds of formulaic kind of lifestyle shows that I enjoy, I do watch every week, even though they are basically the same. I mean, I've seen a lot of episodes of The Hotel Inspector. That's basically the same show every week. I might as well be watching a repeat.
Yes, reality shows, even though reality is a prey to a potential infinity of different paths, the editing tends to be very similar all the time.
Yeah. Well, Undercover Boss is one. I love Undercover Boss.
But once you've seen it a few times, you can imagine it in your mind. You can just imagine a company and then play out that whole hour in your imagination.
Yeah. Well, because, and the thing that's ruined it for me now is I watch it and as they meet the members of staff, I'm like, okay, what's wrong with this one? Dead kid? Disabled mum? Cancer. She's got cancer.
She could never finish her degree because she was caring for her mum who had cancer.
Yeah. And you know, when you see them, you're like, okay, well, that's the story. And that's kind of ruined it because the first time you went along with it, didn't you? And
I can't believe this guy at Yankee Candle's got cancer.
The man who runs Subway is just so nice. The first time you actually genuinely believe he may have just stumbled across a member of staff who happened to have this tragic circumstance, happened to have been homeless. Mm. And then when you see it for the fourth time, you're like, oh, okay, they actually researched this and they go around finding people with sob stories and everyone knows that they're in a TV show and like, oh, okay.
Oh, do they?
But still, you know.
It works on Ollie Mann every time.
Yeah, there's something reassuring about the fact that you know that it's safe and it's going to be the same.
You know that your button is going to be pushed at the 30-minute mark and the 50-minute mark.
And actually, with Les Mis, it is very sad. You know, and it is that thing as well. She probably knows. She probably cries every time. And so maybe she's looking for that depth of emotion.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of
Answer Me. You are kidding me.
We have to remind you listeners to go and get your free Audible audiobook. And you can do that by going to our website,
answermethispodcast.com/audible.
Do it now. It helps us. It will help you get a lovely book in your ears. And there's lots of other stuff on our website as well. Not least, of course, the contact details of how you can send us a question for us to do on next week's show.
Oh, yes. Please join us next week to see which of those questions that we haven't had yet makes it into the show.
Bye.